Welcome to the 1110 Leadership Podcast, where we tackle issues at the intersection of leadership, faith, and culture. I'm your host, Rob Shields, Vice President of Strategy at 1110 Leadership, and I'm joined by my co-host, founder and CEO of 1110 Leadership, David Spicker. Proverbs 1110 lays out a bold and countercultural vision. When the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. We're here to ask, what does it look like practically to be this type of leader? Leaders willing to invest everything they have so that everyone around them can thrive. Join us on the journey as we lean in, listen, and learn how to become Proverbs 1110 kind of leaders. The kind of leaders that make our cities rejoice. David.
Hey, Rob.
You abandoned the hat club, man. I thought we had a thing going.
Well, we had a thing. It was a short-lived thing.
It was brief.
The hat actually made my head hurt. Because we wear earphones, headsets, and it was smashing my hat. My hat was smashing with my ears, and so now I feel a lot more comfortable.
Speaking of podcast accessories, you were bragging about a new accessory that you picked up recently. Would you like to try to woo that company as a sponsor by talking about how much you're enjoying their product right now?
No, I've got a new Owasa. No, Owala. I gotta say the name.
You're not gonna give us any money now.
So I got a new Owala water bottle because I left mine at the car shop and I didn't want to go back to get my old one. It was a great water bottle while it lasted. But I've seen these because all of my family have these water bottles, and I was intrigued. So I'm back.
You're hydrated.
I'm hydrated, and I can quietly sip.
You're better than ever. That's great. And Owala, forgive David for calling you Owasa. We would welcome, 1110 customizable water bottles, right? Mm-hmm. For us to just be able to give away with the purchase of every copy of The Just Leader. So we're not above shamelessly promoting you if you were to hook us up, because my whole family swears by those things. And I also have 4 elementary school kids, which means they lose stuff a lot. So I kind of need to have backups for the current. We're fine now, but just give it till spring break, and we'll be a man down for sure.
Yeah, if you left one of these, you definitely go back to where you were.
The true test of your relationship with your water bottle is, will you turn around when you forget it? That's great. Well, David, I'm excited to continue on this new series we're embarking on, where we are kind of nerding out a little bit, right? Last week was conflict, and we unpacked this Myers-Briggs study around how to have healthier, better conflict at work. And I love how we landed the plane that really sets up today and next week's episodes, because the way that study culminated really summarized as conflict is essentially about building trust and having great conversations. So we're actually going to go back to the very beginning of the podcast, because we tackled trust way back in episode 2 when we were breaking down the THRIVE acronym. So it's fun now that we're on episode 35 to be able to revisit our old stomping grounds here.
Rob, we were way ahead of our time.
Episode 2. We were ahead of the curve. Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about trust in a slightly different angle by breaking down this article titled The Neuroscience of Trust by the Harvard Business Review. So this is a fascinating read. And this article breaks down essentially a series of experiments that were done that measured the brain activity of people while they worked. I'm not sure how that worked, right? Were they wearing a headset? I don't know. I have so many questions there. It didn't really explain the logistics of how this happened, but it happened. They were measuring brain activity while people were working, and they revealed 8 ways that leaders can effectively create and manage a culture of trust, verified through science, right? And brainwaves, which is fascinating. So would love to just your overall big picture reactions to this study, to this article. What were your first impressions in reading this, David?
Well, I think it's a fascinating exercise for them to do this. And my initial reaction was how incredible it is the ways trust impact our physical bodies. And they talk about how we have more oxytocin production because of the ways that we experience trust in the workplace, in this case, or trust in general. And so this has a ripple effect on even our physical health, our emotional health, which makes sense. But to have this tied directly to biological and physical impacts is quite fascinating. And then the other thing that really stood out to me, and as you read this article, you'll get to this, which is people were willing to give up more pay in order to have more control and therefore to be more trusted in their work, which is also extremely fascinating. And it's actually something that we're seeing in the companies that we're working with, that as people are inundated by their work, or they feel like they're micromanaged, or they just feel like they're out of control when they go to work, we have had that feedback. We've even asked that question point blank: would you be willing to have less pay or less of a bonus if you could have a little bit more control and or margin in your work, which goes back to our margin episodes? And almost 100% raised their hand, which is an interesting outcome and feedback for us to listen to. It doesn't necessarily mean we jump at that. That's going to solve everything. But it's saying something to us as leaders that we need to understand and be able to address.
So there's a lot here. I mean, eight ways. So for the purpose of our podcast, we're not going to unpack every one of them, but I'm just going to list them. And we'll drop the link to the full article in the show notes for anyone that wants to just read this and do the full deep dive. But in order, the way the article lists them, one was recognize excellence. Two, induce challenge stress. Three and four were similar: give people discretion in how they do their work and enable job crafting. Five, share information broadly. Six, intentionally build relationships. Seven, facilitate whole person growth. I love that phrase. And then finally, eight, show vulnerability. So, David, when you hear that list and as you read through the examples they talked about for each of them, which one of those, or which of those plural, do you sense leaders really struggle with the most?
Well, in many ways, all of them.
None are easy, right?
And I should say at the same time, we also see examples of leaders who do well in each of these categories. But honestly, as I read through each one of them, I was thinking, man, I would pick that one. I would pick that one. Oh, and that one too. But for the sake of our time today, there are ones that stood out of the eight. The first one is induced challenge stress. And the way they described this is a study that they did where they looked at 12,000 diary entries of employees that were analyzed from a variety of industries. And they found that 76% of people reported that their best days involved making progress toward goals. So it's this idea of pushing people that you're leading to really produce and to expect more of them. I've mentioned this before in a podcast episode that we ask on our Thrive assessment, this following statement: I can do far more than my leader is asking me to do. And invariably, no matter how much volume someone has on their plate, they say yes to that question or that statement, which gets after this idea of leaders needing to be challenge themselves with how they challenge their people and to induce challenge stress. Put people in situations where they're having to really figure things out and it's uncomfortable for them. They may end up failing, but in the process of that, they're learning, and they're learning how to be people who are producers and come up with solutions to the problems that need to be solved. The second one is giving people discretion in how they do their work, which is a good follow-up to what I just said, because I think what we find with our leaders, and this is a really hard balance to maintain as a leader, is what are the right expectations that you need to have of your people? Are you just simply looking at their outcomes, what they produce, or do you also gauge them in how they do their work? And it makes sense for leaders to have standards and or protocols for how work gets done. whether it's done at a certain level of excellence, or it needs to follow some procedure. So it makes sense for a leader to evaluate their people along those hows, but that can easily move into micromanaging as well, where their people feel like, man, I'm delivering, but they keep dinging me on how I'm doing my work. If they just leave me alone, then I can just go and do my work and everybody will feel great about my outcomes. So what's the balance of that? How do you properly give people discretion in how they do their work? And the third one that stood out to me is the one you mentioned that you liked, facilitate whole person growth. I love this phrase. We love this phrase. We did a few podcasts on how do you have goals that make you whole. And so we think a lot about what it looks like for our people and for the people we lead to be whole, that they're not just producers that just get things done, and that's all we look at them for, but they're people that we want to invest in, and we want to invest in them holistically. So it's not just their work and what they deliver, but how they're growing as leaders. Are they healthy? Are they able to rest? How is our work impacting their families? Are they great being leaders in their homes and in their communities? Do they feel like they are complete when it comes to the things that they care about, what they're gifted at doing, and then how work propels them to be whole in all of the areas of their life that make them who they're designed to be? So those are three out of the eight. We could talk a lot about each of those. And then as I look at the other five, there's even more to say.
Yeah, there's echoes in this conversation, David. You know, when we talked about pursuing goals as a company that are just, I've heard you say before this idea of other companies aren't going to care about the things that you're going to care about. It requires you to really go above and beyond. And I think all of this is maybe an example of what we're talking about, but specifically that last one, facilitating whole person growth. It's powerful when we communicate to a leader who is leading a team that isn't secondary to their jobs in leadership. It is their job, right? To invest in their people in holistic ways that lead to their wholeness, right? And so often it feels like the leader is seeing this as an additive or an add-on, or if I have time, or if the company's doing well, but there's a big if attached to whole person growth. And really to be able to turn the tables on a leader and say, no, this is actually your main mission in your role, in your leadership, is to help cultivate people. You're in the people business, right? Regardless of what you're selling, regardless of what product you're peddling. So I love that when we can make that turn for a leader, and the leader can actually start to lean into this one as the primary focus for their vocation.
We've mentioned this in a previous episode, but this is what young leaders, young professionals value the most. Mm. It's being whole. And wouldn't you want to be the company, right, that everybody knows that says, man, when I go work at that company, they care about me as a whole person. You wouldn't do this for this reason, but wouldn't that be a great recruiting strategy when you are known as that place where people can thrive? And so it's fun to see this in a study from Harvard as one of the eight characteristics around trust.
Yeah, and speaking of differentiating yourself for your reputation as a company, it leads off with number one being recognize excellence, and it frames up a couple statistics that really hits the point home. It says 80% of employees would report being more productive if they were recognized more frequently at work. 82% of employees agree that recognition for their contributions improves their engagement. Yet despite, 8 out of 10 for both of those categories, only 52% of employees surveyed have an employee recognition program at their company, which means almost half do not. So can you just speak a little bit? We talk about this buzzword of having a culture of celebration, which definitely speaks to this point and how important that is. Can you just speak to, maybe in your experience working with leaders, how have you seen examples of people just really hitting a home run when it comes to examples of people who really lean into recognizing excellence and doing this well?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that this is number one on the list. And to be honest, before I answer your question, I would say that this is where leaders, I think, sometimes are even the most hesitant, because it's almost like giving everybody a participation trophy, you know? And they feel like if we're all so rah-rah all the time, that we're not really driving where we're missing some gaps and we're overlooking some places where there really are, where there's underperformance or where there are gaps. So, and that's, again, that's a rightful place to be, to understand, you know, to figure out what's the right line of this. But I love that this is first, because it shows how important it is. We work with a company who has a company-wide meet, or a company leadership meeting, extended leadership meeting every month. They are very committed to driving leadership within their organization. They have up to 30 or 40 leaders who meet every month for ongoing development, leadership training, good communication across the organization. And they use that time as an opportunity to recognize every month leaders who are being tracked on 8 different categories and KPIs that are critical to their success. And so, and then they have offshoots of that recognition for others who've demonstrated the core values or other ways in which they have been affirmed or acknowledged by their coworkers or the people that they lead. So it's become, for them, a regular way to do that. Of course, this is also talking about how affirmation and celebration is not just planned, but it's organic. It's really affirming people along the way and doing that not just to, you know, be trite, but when it's very meaningful, somebody did an incredible job, people notice that, and taking the time to be thoughtful in our communication about how important and significant that accomplishment is and was to us, the team, as well as the overall company, you know, goes a long way. It's the little things that happen can change somebody's trajectory for that day immensely, which again is I think why this quality is at the top of the list.
Yeah, along those same lines, this point about sharing information broadly. The study says that only 40% of employees report that they are well-informed about their company's goals, strategies, and tactics, which is really low, right? 6 out of 10 are in the dark when it comes to some pretty important things like goals and strategy. And it also said something, this might have been the most fascinating statistic that really jumped out at me. Workers who know how their goals connect to the larger mission are more inspired and are 10 times more likely to feel motivated. So you want a 10x motivator for your team? We talked a couple episodes back about underperforming teams and what really is going to light a fire. Well, we're talking about it now. This is one of the ways we could do it, right? Is just sharing information more broadly, but be it celebration because you're recognizing excellence, or just simply where we're going. Mission and vision, updates on goals and strategy and how we're doing, and helping people connect their work to that end game has a 10x effect on motivation. That's crazy. So this one is all about communication. We're going to go there next time and do a deeper dive on communication in the next episode. But we even talked about this last episode around conflict and how the Myers-Briggs study really talked about how poor communication contributes to conflict, how it hits differently whether you're an in-office employee or you're on a hybrid schedule. You might have different contributing factors to what is the source of conflict. But can you just talk about how leaders can do better at sharing information broadly that would build trust and simultaneously reduce conflict?
This is so good. I mean, I'm kind of busting over here out of the seams, because this data from this study is so relevant for some meetings coming up in the next couple of weeks that we have with some clients that we're working with. You know, it's interesting. They have this 10X feeling of productivity when you know the mission, vision, values, the direction of the organization, which means that first leaders need to know where they're going and what their mission, vision, and values are. But more than that, what their goals are for this year and what they're trying to accomplish and what they want their company to look like at the end of this year, at the end of 3 years, at the end of 5 years. And, you know, a lot of companies aren't taking the time to do that. It is so critical for companies to do this, not just because of making good decisions for your future, but like this study shows, to give context and perspective for your employees, to tell them where we're headed so that they can see how the work that they're doing fits into the bigger picture. Can't tell you how many times we get feedback from employees who just don't know where they stand and they don't have a sense of where they're going and their work and then where the company is going and how that fits. And so when you have that ambivalent or unclear picture for yourself, then you're going to start looking for another job. You're not going to know what your future holds, so you're going to start to look for other opportunities. So that's first. You got to know and you got to communicate who you are, what you're about, where you're headed. And then you have to decide what you share and what you don't share. And that's, you know, different for every company, depending on the context. It's also different maybe for different people within your company. So there are certain things that you share with certain leaders who have access to information. There's other information that you don't share because it wouldn't be appropriate for certain levels of people in your organization. And you have to know exactly what that line is. And your leaders need to know exactly what that line is so that they don't cross the lines that are inappropriate for what you share and what you don't share. And while I say that, I want to say that you need to push to be as transparent as you can before you get to that line. I can't tell you exactly what that line is for your company, but my guess is you probably need to be more transparent than you are. That's not across the board. Again, some people are, leaders are way too much of an open book, and we need to reel them back in. But most leaders need to be more transparent than they are with the information that they share with their employees. And then you need to figure out how you share that information. What's your method of communication? And as we said before, people need to hear things 7 times before they understand them. So what are your different methods? Face-to-face, do you do a monthly email? Do you have a lunch and learn? Do you do it as a big company? Do you do it in small departments? How do you make sure that the message is communicated clearly across all of your leaders so that it's not a game of telephone? And by the end of the line, the message is distorted. You've got to be very, very intentional about how you deliver your communication, and you need to do it more than you think. Invariably, leaders think they're doing enough, but instead they need to over-communicate. And then the last part is to think through how this is just part of your culture and organic. It's not planned. You don't just have to have a monthly newsletter or planned lunch and learn or planned company meeting, but you need to have organic ways in which things are communicated on an ongoing basis so that people feel like they work in a culture of transparency. And that is one of the greatest ways to build trust.
I love that. All right, David, it's bottom line time. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
If you had to pick one, I know you said that they're all probably equally weighted in your mind, that leaders need to think through all of them, pursue all of them. But if you're a leader who's listening to this and says, you know, where do I start? What advice would you have for them that would really be the best starting place for building a culture of trust or strengthening a culture of trust at their organization?
Yeah, well, I love all of these. If I were to start, I would say the last one, which is show vulnerability. Mm. And the reason why I say that is because I think the bottom line for us today, and for those of you listening, what I want to give you as a next step for this is, if you're a leader and you have people that follow you and you're investing in and you're trying to build a culture of trust, you have to find out first the level of trust you have in your organization. And that is an act of vulnerability. I know we always come back to this, doing an assessment, and we have a Thrive assessment. The very first thing that we look at is the level of trust within your organization. Do you know how much people trust you as a leader? Have you asked yourself how much you trust those you lead? Which of those you lead do you trust more? And who do you not trust? And why is that? And do they sense your level of trust in them? I bet they can. You might feel like you're given a poker face with the people you feel like you trust more than others, but I guarantee you people have that sense. And do you know how much your people trust one another? If you don't have a sense of that and you're only doing that based on perception, then that's not a good place to start. You have to have something, a tool or some resource, some way of getting good feedback to measure the level of trust you have with you and your team and across your organization. Because without knowing that, you're not going to know what your next steps are. You could apply these 8 principles, which we'd encourage you to do. And we encourage you as a next step, certainly, to read this article. But again, you're going to be doing it in a vacuum if you don't know where you stand. We'd be happy to help with that, of course, with the Thrive assessment we use. But there are several great assessments that are out there that you can use to be able to identify where you stand on trust.
That's great. And I think that it's even just encouraging, right, for any leader, regardless of how they perceive their level of trust to be within their company, whether they're, you know, made mistakes and need to repair it, or whether they've inherited a situation that's a little sticky and thorny, right? And they know that they have a real challenge on their hands when it comes to restoring trust or building it anew. The simple fact that there are things you can do to actually get your hands around this, right, and measure it, I think is an encouragement. And I would echo that, to taking advantage of the resources that are out there. And we'll drop a link into our show notes as well for access to the Thrive assessment, if that's going to be a good fit for you. So, all right, David, trust from now on. How to be a super communicator.
Super communicator. Love that.
Not just average, not just okay. Super. No,
super. Strap in.
We're gonna channel our inner Marvel superhero for this conversation. It's going to be great. I'll see you then.
Thanks, Rob.
To learn more about 1110 Leadership, visit our website at 1110leadership.com. That's the numerals 1-1, then spelled out T-E-N, leadership.com. That's 1-1-T-E-N, leadership.com. There you'll find more resources to equip you on the journey of becoming an 1110 leader. You can also get connected to our growing leadership network. If you've enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend. To help others find us, you can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.